Kavinsky here with episode 61 of the TVMLS video game podcast for TVMLS.net. Today, we have the one and only Seth Costello.
Ohio.
And by one and only, I mean that's it. He's the only one here.
Yeah, not like I'm special or anything. Literally just me here with Craig.
That's okay. Chris was going to be with us. He's not feeling well, so we hope he feels better, of course.
I think he's faking, by the way.
You know what? He's probably sitting there playing Batman like a jackass. His podcast.
Probably.
Yeah, wow. Well.
He's probably playing it going, man, I wish I started Spider-Man instead.
Why can't Spider-Man get games as good? He's sitting there in like his like Spider-Man underoos.
I think he's in his like his green vest and his little khaki shorts, sitting with Pork Chop.
Yeah, he might be doing that too. So we have another game to give away this episode, isn't that right, Seth?
Do we? Oh man, I guess
we are going bonkers here, giving away games.
I guess I could do something like that.
I joke about it. I honestly hope people don't think we're just trying to like buy popularity. I don't think unless I say something like anti-Semitic or something, like this podcast probably isn't going to get too much popular than what it is.
But That's weird, Craig, because the email you sent that about the email game said...
He's going to leak all this shit.
Said, let's buy people's popularity. I mean, reading your email right here says, let's buy people's popularity. Hey, gang, our podcast is not that popular, so let's give games and buy it. These are your words.
Yeah, I did. I think I wrote that. I don't know. I think that was autocorrect. I typed that one out on my iPad.
Did you read that autocorrect website top 50 thing or whatever?
I get people post shit on like Facebook because I love my friends, God bless them, but they're really boring people, so they just post a bunch of bullshit on Facebook. That's all they do. And so I've read random images that people have put up, but I don't think I've ever been to the website. It's kind of like peopleofwalmart.com. You see the images everywhere, but have you ever really been to the website? Like, I haven't.
Well, somebody linked to the top 50 of damnyouautocorrect.com. It's pretty – I was, like, trying to read it at work, and I was just, like, on the verge of busting up several times, so I just had to stop.
Some of them are pretty funny. Some of them are pretty good.
They're pretty good.
They don't really talk about buying popularity or anything. Each episode of this podcast is downloaded probably about 400 or 500 times, I think. So, I don't know. That's pretty good.
Yeah, I think that's great.
I'm pretty happy with that. If we can push 1,000 at some point, that would be awesome. But we have a really good core audience, so that's why that's why we're giving away games now as opposed to when we first started out. That's why a lot of people do like, oh, we got a copy of Halo Reach for you guys, and like some guy like totally fucking like spent like half his paycheck on like Halo Reach to get his podcast more popular. We're doing it now because we already know our audience is awesome, so we're giving back to our awesome audience rather than trying to buy in new people who really don't give a shit.
They're all buying people who aren't even there.
Well, yeah.
We don't know if we had an audience when we first started, so.
Yeah, and I wouldn't blame them if we didn't, it's sort of okay.
Are you saying it was awful? Are you saying the podcast was awful, Craig?
I think we had good intentions. It's just none of us had done that.
Which is a nice way of saying it was awful?
No. If it was awful, I would have said it was awful. It wasn't great, but it's just... And people were hilarious. We're like on like our 7th episode and they're like, this is fucking stupid. And it's like, well, that's not constructive criticism, man. Like, that's not helpful at all. Like,
I thought it helped. I was like, maybe I should try to be not fucking stupid.
Well, we already knew our problems, though.
Yeah,
I just think some of these problems are like intrinsic to just starting out. Like, a lot of people like ask me like, on YouTube, like, oh, I want to make videos. Do you have any tips? And I'm like, the first tip is accept the fact that you're probably going to be fucking terrible at first. Because everyone is. Like, no one is used to... When you're making a video, you're literally talking to no one. You're sitting in a room by yourself.
It's the weirdest shit, dude. I don't know.
Yeah. And you're talking to no one. And that's tough to get used to. You're going to be bad. You're not going to understand your editing software. Your lighting is probably going to be shitty. My lighting is sometimes shitty because I just got these energy saver bulbs. They're bad. But... these things happen when you first start something, and to tell someone like you're fucking terrible is not helpful to that situation. So,
yeah, you should just be like, no awkward pauses. You guys need to stop that.
And we did, and I think we're pretty good now. We got this banter going back and forth.
Yeah, totally banter.
Except for when I mute my mic and go to the bathroom or something.
Yeah, that's like you should just go to the bathroom on the microphone. I don't see why you don't do that. I want to hear it. I'm sure everybody else does too.
Bring the MacBook into the bathroom with me.
Yes. It's about time.
Anyway, so we had Halloween this past week.
Did we?
Yeah, we did. Did you do anything?
I'm trying to think. I did go to some stupid, like, neighborhood haunted house because somebody told me I had to.
And how was that?
It's pretty bad.
It's pretty bad.
I've never been to a professional one before, though, so, like, I don't... Like, other people said it was good, but I was like, I don't know.
Did you go to Knott's Scary Farm?
No.
You should have gone for me, man.
I don't... I told you.
Was it, like, 3 hours away?
Less than that.
Two. I loved Knott's Scary Farm that time I went. It was awesome. It was awesome. People just jump out of bushes and just chase you.
That's not fun.
That's awesome. They're like, I'm trying to get to the bathroom. Like, no, it's great.
Is that what you're into? Just being, like, chased around?
I don't know. I mean, it's I don't know. It's better than some other things. Like a rubber spider, like, dropping from the ceiling and, like, a strobe light going off. Like, this is terrifying.
Spiders and epilepsy are both very scary, okay?
And you know, they have, like, those houses that you can walk through, like, the haunted things. I don't know. You walk through and there's people in costumes and stuff.
I haven't been there forever.
When did I go to California? Like, 2005 or something? That was a long time ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably the 90s for me.
Okay. Wow, that's a long time ago. No, that's pretty good. And I was in one of the haunted houses, and, like, this girl dressed up as, like, a zombie cheerleader kept, like, following me around. She's like, you want to go on a date? And I'm like, sure. She's like, and then she tries to make it. She's like, you want to take a hearse? I'm like, as long as I can drive. She's just being a smart ass to this fucking actress. It's pretty great. But no, I enjoyed that. We went to like a haunted house around here. It was about, I don't know, like a half an hour away. We had to drive a little bit to get to it, but it was really well done. I think it's set up in like an old, I don't know, some sort of old building. Like, it smells like basement in the entire fucking thing, which is great. I'm like, oh my god, Craig, I think it smells like this all the time.
But got the authentic mold smell.
Yeah. No, it was really, really good. And a lot of the scares were, like, cheap things where, like is that a dummy or a person? I can't tell because it's too fucking... Son of a bitch! it was just huge. Like, you went throughout this whole house, and then you went outside, like, into the garden, through, like, the cemetery they set up, and then back into the house through the basement. And it was really well done. And, you know, not, like, super scary or anything, just really... fun, just really well done. I liked it a lot. It was really expensive to get into, but it was good.
You should have been like,
I talked to the act. I'm a smart ass in situations like that. Like, I like someone would be like, and I would just stare at him like, we're going to the movies after this. You want to come with us?
Is that a defense mechanism, Craig?
Is that
to hide your fear?
It might be to hide my fear. Oh, my God. Well, they tell you right up front, no one's going to touch you. And I'm like, there goes this.
Why did I pay that much money if nobody's going to touch me?
I know. I'm not going to even buy me dinner first. And we did go see Paranormal Activity 3 afterwards. Do you see any of those movies?
I have not seen a single one.
I think they're on Netflix. 1 and 2, anyway. And I like them. I mean, a lot of people are, you know, they're basically like the same thing. Like, all three movies are, like, basically the same thing. But the narrative ties together. Like, they really ad hoc, like, retcon, like, the narrative really well. Like, I'm really surprised how well they're able to stretch out, like, this mythos across these three movies. Because the first movie is basically a standalone movie. It didn't need a sequel. Mm-hmm. But I think it's sort of like Bioshock in the sense that, yeah, Bioshock 2 came along. It was probably unnecessary. But it worked its way into the narrative really well, and it was still pretty good in its own right. And I think that's sort of like what the Paranormal Activity sequels are like. And I like them. I like them because I think a lot of our horror movies are either too goofy to be scary, or they just show the insides of people. And that's all they do. And
I don't like those ones.
I don't like those ones either because they're just pointless. You know, I don't know which Saw movie it was, Saw 17, something like that, where, like, some woman had, like, hooks in her chest, and there's a timer going off, she had to do something, I don't know, and then the timer went off, and then the hooks just ripped open her ribcage, and there was just an open person, like, hanging there, and, like, that's what they put in the movie. And I'm like, okay, this doesn't seem...
It's more like gruesome than scary. I don't know.
Well, right, exactly, but I think it's just the idea, like, they're confusing, like... horror or fright for
gore,
like gruesomeness, right? You know, and they're not one and the same. Like seeing the insides of a person, not fun, but it's not exactly like legitimate fright either. Mm-hmm. So, and I lean towards like supernatural stuff. Like, I think one thing that the Paranormal Activity movies do well is build up tension. Like, Dana's watching, she's like, "This is boring, nothing's happening." And the third movie takes place like in the 80s. So, like, is it the 80s? Maybe like the 90s or something like that. The equipment isn't as hot. So, like, the main character, in order to like film like his living room and his dining room at the same time, rips apart a fucking fan, puts the camera on top of it, and has it oscillate. So you're watching this camera slowly pan back and forth, and it builds up tension. It's like a really awesome device to build up tension. It actually works really well. And that's what I like about those movies. They build up the tension well, and they sprinkle the payoffs throughout. But people don't have the pay. They would just want to see someone ripped open. I don't think a lot of people have patience for that. But, yeah, they're fun. I like them.
I don't even know if I'm big on, like, scary movies in the first place.
I think that's why. I think all these reasons are the reasons why, and I think Paranormal Activity is quite different from all those things.
I shall Netflix the first one.
Give it a shot. It's fun.
And once my TV's fixed, anyway. I guess I can watch on my, like, computer, but then I don't get surround sound stuff.
But that was a few days before Halloween, I think. And then on Halloween, I just went to the bar. I dressed up as the 10th Doctor. And...
Is that a Doctor Who thing, Craig?
That is a Doctor Who thing, Seth. That's on Netflix, so you should be watching that. Why are you not watching Doctor Who?
Because there's like 8,000 episodes.
There really aren't that many. It's a British TV show. There's like 3 episodes per season, man.
Really?
They don't have long seasons. Huh. Or series, is they
call it. Yeah, they're series.
Pardon me. But, Doctor Who's awesome. I was a 10th Doctor because I like David Tennant a lot. I'm not as thin as David Tennant, but I'm getting there. And I'm not as attractive as David Tennant, but... You know, who is, really.
He looks kind of bird-like to me. I don't know.
I like him. I think he's awesome. But I only thought he was awesome after, like, Doctor Who. Then I'm like, this guy fucking rules.
Do you know who he looks like?
Who?
He looks like Tendo Gamer.
He does. He does. Yeah. This is someone that Seth and I know. We talk like there's no fucking audience here. It's probably what makes our podcast awesome. Like, hey, there's people listening to this.
All right, right.
Hi, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to our conversation about Halloween and people you don't know. But I went to the bar, and, like, everyone's like, who are you? And of course, then you take advantage of, like, I'm the doctor. And, like, and of course, that's the answer. I'm the doctor. And they're like, what? I'm like, you uncultured motherfuckers. You go home and watch Keeping Up with Kardashians. I'm going to watch some motherfucking BBC. Got some class up in this bitch. And then my bartender, who I love, but she's like, she comes back to me like later. She's like, so you're the professor? And she's like, what? I'm like, forget this. Just give me another Malibu and diet.
Should have had a... Well, he's just like some dude in a suit. Does he have like a gimmick that you could like...
I had my sonic screwdriver.
All right. Don't know what that is, but is that a drink?
That would be a pretty good drink. No. It's a phallic object that lights up and makes sounds.
And they're called vibrators, Greg.
Sonic screwdrivers in this household.
Okay.
I guess we can talk about some of the week's news. Now that we got all that out of the way. How long are we into this podcast? I'm curious. This is
I hope
great.
Like 8 hours. I think
it's like 15 minutes.
Right,
whatever. Okay. We have lives other than video games, people. Jesus Christ.
People could skip around. It's like recording.
You know what I'm going to do? Yeah, you know, I always think people are going to skip around. We told them there's going to be a video game to win in this. So, of course, everyone's skipping forward. They're not even listening. I'm going to fill this episode full of like pockets of like 20 minutes of silence so no one knows where the fuck anything is when they skip around.
Should you just not even give away a game at the end?
Like, where is it? Oh, man, that would be awesome. We love to fuck with you here at TV Unlist. So, story number one, Resident Evil Revelations on the 3DS is going to be priced at $50, probably only like one retailer because Amazon still has it for $40.
Uh-huh.
And Capcom's explanation for this is the fact that, like, you know, people ask for console-quality games on their handhelds. We're delivering that, and in delivering that, the game got really big, so we basically had to make, like, we basically had to license a 3DS card that was twice as big as the norm. No other game is this big on the 3DS, so it's specifically for this game. It costs us extra money. We're not we're not a charity, so it's going to cost you extra money. So apparently it's $50. People were pissed. And, of course, people are already upset with Capcom for, like, canceling Mega Man Legends 3. They're upset about Mercenaries, although I don't know why, because that game is awesome. You know, they're upset about Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3. Everyone's just pissed about everything. And so this, you know, really didn't help. But, honestly, like, I'm not really that perturbed by this. Mainly because you can still get it for $40. Like, there's no problem there. Like, just go to Amazon, pre-order it now. If Amazon jacks the price, you still get it for $40.
And if they lower it, you get it even cheaper.
Right. So that's Amazon's pre-order price guarantee. And if you don't, if you decide come February, whatever, when it's coming out, and you decide you don't want it, just cancel your pre-order. You don't get charged until it ships. So you can lock in that price just in case you might want it. And that's what I recommend people do. But, I mean, this really isn't that different from what happened, you know, all throughout, like for example, like the 16-bit era. You know, there are some games that were like $90 to $120. Like, if you wanted Phantasy Star 3, you were going to fork over, you know, a lot of money for that. And this is only 10 extra dollars, whereas something like Phantasy Star 3 was a lot of extra money, way more than this, even proportionately speaking, even if we don't adjust for inflation. I don't really think it's that bad. What do you think?
I don't have a problem with it, honestly. I mean, if the game costs more for them to make or even, like, you know, print, then I have no problem it costing more to buy. But I wonder if, like, if all 3DS games were $50, if anybody would be complaining. Because, like, when the HD consoles all went to $60, I mean, there was complaining for a very short while, and then everybody got over it, you know?
Yeah. But, I mean, well, and that's funny, too, because this generation on consoles, we've seen games go up in price by $10. We've seen the rise of special editions. We've seen the rise of locking out multiplayer content. We've seen the rise of day one DLC. Like, the fact of the matter is everyone's trying to wring more money from your hands. And this time, like, I look at this and I go, okay, so it costs them more in hardware, so they're charging you a little extra. I'm not, not really that of all the ways that people are trying to get more money from me, this one seems like the less egregious. And the funny thing is, this is what people want. People wanted console quality experiences on their handhelds. They're like, oh, I'm playing Angry Birds.
That's making you mad, though? Like, the people going like, oh, this shouldn't be on the 3DS now. This should be on a console.
Well, that's what's hilarious. I'm speaking very generally, and I hate to do this, even though I do it all the time. I do hate to do it. And it's just like, it's so frustrating because people who play video games make me not want to play video games anymore. It's like, make up your mind. You want console quality experiences on a handheld. Like, that costs money, and that's going to cost you more money. And then you turn around and say, well, it should be on a console then. Well, then what? Like, I don't even understand the complaint then. I think at the end of the day, though, is like anything else, you need the budget and you need to accept what's worth what to you. And if it's not worth $40 or $50 to you, wait till it goes on sale, because it will. You know, it will drop in price. It will go on sale. You'll probably get, like, maybe a gift certificate or something like that. Like, there are ways to mitigate the cost in this day and age around every corner. So it's really not even worth getting that angry about.
Yeah. And if it's on principle alone, well, I mean, you should probably be complaining. I don't know, like, where did, like, anger complaints? That's how much a 4-gigabyte cart costs.
Well, everyone was like, it's only 2 gigs more. I mean, I can go down to the Walgreens and buy. It's not the same thing as going out and buying consumer-grade flash memory. Like, this is a licensed card that has to be specifically manufactured, in this case, for this one game. It's not the same thing at all.
Nope.
Does it cost $10? No. But it doesn't cost the same thing as you going down to Walgreens and buying, you know, a flash, you know, thumb drive or whatever. It's not the same thing.
So. I wonder. I mean, like, obviously Square Enix did it all throughout the DS with, like, their $5 increase on a lot of games.
Right. Well, that was the 3DS was weird because all the games started out at $30, and then they crept up to $35, and then some publishers put them out for $40. And then you had the bargain stuff at, like, $20. So, I mean, you had, like, a wide range of prices on the DS.
And,
really,
and then you have GameStop selling, like, everything for $5 more than everybody else.
Yeah, you did have that. So,
which I never got.
Yeah. So, honestly, everything I see from Revelations looks awesome. It looks like a great, like, Resident Evil. Like, I'm excited for it, because, like, I played the demo on Mercenaries, It's only a few minutes long. I really liked it. I'll be picking this game up. I haven't really touched a Resident Evil game since like 4 on the GameCube. So I'll be excited to pick this one up. It looks and plays great, and the multiplayer modes have me really interested as well. So it looks like a great game. So if it costs money to make, well, I guess I'm gonna have to pay money to buy it. I was having a discussion with this Jason Schreier, who writes, I think he's employed by Wired, but he freelances for other places like Joystick and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And he's a really smart guy. If you guys aren't following Jason Schreier on Twitter, you really should. He's really funny. I like him a lot. But you know, he disagreed with me on this. You know, he said like, well, should all games that have more content, should they cost more? Should Skyrim cost more than Uncharted? And I don't think it's so much the content. I mean, maybe we can translate that to effort. Does a game that takes more effort cost more money? I don't know. In this case, I think it really comes back to the hardware. But, you know, there is a precedent for this, and like even in other mediums. Like, you know, you pay more for a Criterion DVD than you do a regular DVD. You pay your college textbooks cost more than, you know, a novel. Because of reasons.
Or even just on the... Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, that's weird. Everything was silent. Even, like, on the hardware side, like, you pay more for a 3D movie than you do for a regular movie when you go to a movie theater.
Right. Well, then I pointed that out to him, and he said, well, every 3D movie, regardless of its budget, costs the same. And that's a good point. I mean, like, even, like, regular movies cost the same. So maybe that wasn't a very good point, but you still see this disparity in, you know, home releases. Like, a Blu-ray costs more than a DVD. You know, multi-disc sets cost more. Why? Oh, because, weird, there's more media in there.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I mean, no one has to like being, you know, no one has to like this fact. A lot of these things that I reason out on this podcast, I don't like either. I don't like DLC on the disc, but I understand why DLC on the disc exists, and that's why I'm not so, like, angry about it. And that's why I'm not angry at this, like, whatever. It is what it is.
Yep.
So, but it looks like it's going to be a great game, so I'm excited to play that. And I have it pre-ordered through Amazon, so that's why I suggest everyone else does.
I have mine pre-ordered.
Yep. What else do we have? We have the Grand Theft Auto 5 trailer this week.
And we did.
And I'm excited that it's in Los Santos, because I like that location. I like the variety in that location. As technically impressive as Vice City was in 4... It was really kind of uninteresting in many ways.
Liberty City.
Sorry, I don't know why I said Vice City. Liberty City. Thank you. That was really kind of boring, actually.
I saw mountains and stuff in the trailer for this one, so I was like, yes.
Yeah. There's, like, there's trees. So
there's rural areas.
Right. So that's pretty exciting. I really want to see like a more, I don't know, just more variety in the environments rather than just running through the same urban sprawl over and over again. Because people are like, oh, man, I totally learned the city. I'm like, why would you do that? It's so boring. It's so boring. I'm excited for the change in environment. And I really have to see gameplay. Like, I'm excited for what I saw in the trailer because I like that area. But at the same time, like, make the gunplay better. Make my friends don't bug me every 5 seconds. And give me some fun shit to do. I want to drive a monster truck off a fucking cliff. You know, so that those are the things, the sort of things that I want to see in this game. And obviously the trailer isn't going to show that.
Nope. Just show the area, but the area does look nice.
Yep.
So.
Yep. And it looks really impressive because, I mean, I like a lot of people, I played San Andreas and it's sort of an ugly game, I think, in many ways. Like, it looks nice, but I mean, in other ways, it's very ugly. And a lot of pop-in and things like that. And it's really cool to see that area, you know, rendered with this engine because it's really nice to look at.
Do you think they're going to do any more of the other cities in San Andreas, or do you think it's just going to be Los Santos?
I don't know. It depends on how big and interesting they make it because, I mean, it really doesn't matter because it's not like, I mean, obviously in 4 they called it Vice City. I mean, sorry, Liberty City. I did it again. They called it Liberty City, but it doesn't bear any resemblance to the Liberty City in 3.
Yeah.
So they can call it whatever they want and make the environment look like anything they want because
I mean,
who's really going to pick at them for that?
The area already looks like huge in just from the trailer for 5, so that's why I'm wondering if they'll bother doing San Fierro and Las Venturas and stuff.
Yeah, they might just call it Los Santos and just have it like this giant area that bears no resemblance to Los Santos as we know it.
Uh-huh.
Like they did with Liberty City.
Which I'd be fine with.
Yeah, exactly. Me too. Just a name. Don't really care. But I'm interested in how it plays out. I mean, I think as far as playability goes, I just want more fun things to do. I didn't feel like Grand Theft Auto 4 had that. And, I mean, bowling and darts and stuff, that's not
No, don't even talk about those.
I know. They're not very good, and they weren't very fun. And I want the gunplay to be better. Like, the gunplay is just so... Like, in all the GTAs, the guns are just... I hate using them. But they're such a key part of the game. And they need to be better. They really do. So, those are probably my two biggest things.
Yeah.
What about you? Any hopes or dreams for Grand Theft Auto 5?
I think they're going to stick with the direction they're going with that they took with 4, which is like more serious, I guess.
Yeah, like more narrative driven.
Yeah.
And I don't understand these narratives. Like, Seth already knows this. I pointed this out elsewhere, not on a podcast. But to me, it's so strange that they have these conflicted heroes in their narratives because obviously people can identify with that. Oh, he really wants to be a good person, but he just got sucked in his life of crime. It's an age-old story. I get it. But the problem is you can't have that kind of defined narrative where you put players in control of the character and the players can then steal a dump truck and run over a bunch of people. That's not really a conflicted hero anymore. He just ran over a bunch of people with a dump truck. you can't have that defined of a character and then give players free reign because the players can just do so many things that are out of character for that character.
Yeah, so you like just go down a sidewalk running over like 50 people, and then the next cut scene's like, oh, cousin, you're sucking me back into this. I don't want to do this.
Exactly. It doesn't make any sense. And one of our friends said, well, I don't take in that part as any kind of character development. But I mean, your character's still doing it. You can still get arrested for it in the game. It just doesn't. To me, it doesn't make any sense. Make someone who wants to be a criminal. Like, that's why Claude in, like, Grand Theft Auto 3 was, like, the best. Because he didn't say anything. He's nobody. You could do whatever you want with him.
Get a name?
What?
Get a name?
I don't know where Claude... people either call him Claude, which I'm not really sure where that came from, or Fido. Because in one cutscene, one of the characters refers to him as Fido. But I don't know where the Claude came from. I think that might be his canon name.
I think he, like, shows up in San Andreas, actually, as Claude.
Oh, okay.
Somewhere in there. I don't know. Yeah, I think that's what I read.
Okay. Got it. All right. So it could be an interesting game. I like the change. I like the change of environment, but we'll see on some of the finer details later, I'm sure.
But I think the environment plays a pretty big role in these games. So step one, I'm happy with, I guess, so far.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. And what else do we have? Oh yeah, Super Mario 3D Land for the 3DS is going to contain a firmware update, which is kind of interesting. Obviously PSP games did this, and Wii games do it too. They have firmware updates on there. Obviously, it's a way to lock out. You know, it adds anti-piracy measures on popular games. You want to play this game, you have to install these anti-piracy measures. Perfectly reasonable, I think. I'm not really perturbed by that. It also contains an update for the friends list, and I wish it was updated a little bit more so it was easier to sort through. Like, it's sort of neat to sort of shuffle through your friends like they were, like, playing cards, but that's not, it's fun, but it's not practical. I wish there was a more practical way to organize your friends list. But what it does add is a join game button, so if someone's online playing a game, you can just tap that and quickly join their game, so.
That seems weird to me. Like, how do you know they're in a position where their game's joinable? Like, what if they're in the middle of a match or like?
Well, that's where ideally a messaging system comes in. It would be cool if like the games were able to tell you what they're doing, but I think the games themselves would have to be programmed, like Xbox Live does. It tells you what your friend's doing in a game.
Uh-huh.
I would imagine the games would have to be programmed to be able to communicate that kind of information through the friends list. But that would be the most ideal way. Also, I think, like, a messaging system would come into play. And it sounds like that's what's going to happen, you know, with this next firmware update. Was it this month, next month, something like that?
I wonder why it's a join button and not an invite button.
Interesting. I don't know. I think they're trying. I think this is indicative of a Nintendo trying to tread water that they don't really understand. And I give them full credit. It's just, look what other people... Other people copied you because you were doing something awesome. Just copy other people, Nintendo. It's okay if you Nintendo-fy it. I like the fact that the messaging system is something I can scribble on and attach photos to and send it to people. Like, that's cool. I'm glad that you Nintendo-fy the messaging system. But you need to copy other things, too.
Has its own little music and everything, too.
Right. So, that's awesome. I'm glad that you took an idea and Nintendo-fied it. But you got to do it other things. Just look what other people are doing and copy it. Stop being afraid. Like, joining a game and inviting a game really isn't that special a thing. I think my AOL Instant Messenger did that, like, 10 years ago. It's really not that big of a deal. It's not un-Nintendo to do that. So, and of course, you know, there's all this doom and gloom talk. Of course, we're contributing to that. But there's a lot of Nintendo doom and gloom talk lately. It's really unnerving how people want a villain in the video game industry. How quickly they want a villain.
Are they the villain, though? I don't know. They're more like the...
Oh, I don't think that they are the villain, but I just think that the people want a villain, so they will vilify.
They seem more like a...
Didn't we just say this last episode? Like, that's the one thing, like, Sony and Microsoft fanboys will come together for.
Yeah,
on Nintendo. Like, a lot of sites, Joystick just ran one yesterday about, like, you know, analysts and investors talking about, like, Nintendo's future, and just read the comments. Just read the comments, and that'll, I mean, that doesn't paint you a complete picture, because it's people, you know, only the people that want to actually type something out, but, it's not pretty. People have a very negative perception, and some of it's warranted, but I think at the end, like, Nintendo still makes really good games. Like, you know, people are all like, oh, another Kirby game, but, like, Mass Attack isn't like anything you've played. There's nothing else like it. Who cares that they use Kirby to put that idea out there? They put that idea out there so it would sell, because when they often package new ideas with new properties, no one gives a fuck. So they take a really cool idea and they put Kirby in it, and then all of a sudden it's a little more interesting. So can't really fault them for that, especially given the huge stable of characters that they have. You know.
But Nintendo seems more like a punching bag than, like, vilified to me.
Okay, yeah, maybe that's a better way of looking at it. I mean, yeah, I can agree with that. They are a punching bag. People are upset with trends in the industry, yeah. Like, they blame Nintendo.
They do. And
honestly, I don't get it. I don't. I, like, you know, as much as I bitch about the PS3, I really have nothing against, like, Sony. Like, whatever. No. Like, Sony's a company. They didn't, you know, they're like, we're going to make these updates very long just to piss off Craig. Like, that didn't happen, so I don't take it personally. The way people take these things personally is just hilarious. As if the board of directors sat around and, how can we piss off Chad Smith in Austin, Texas today?
Yeah, we'll make Spirit Tracks completely touch.
Yeah, oh man, Nintendo, you betrayed your fans. Yeah, nah, you know, I don't know. I don't get it, so whatever. But, I guess that's all we have for news.
I guess so.
We are going to talk a little bit about games as art, whether they are art or not. Seth and I sort of touched on this briefly last episode. I'm sure we touched on it briefly in other episodes, but...
But now we're finally going to solve this mystery.
We're going, yeah, like a fucking Rubik's Cube, and then just,
definitively,
yeah.
We're going to definitively answer whether or not video games are art.
Okay. Just... Your knee-jerk answer, and we'll hash out the details later, all the buts and howevers, are video games art?
Sometimes. Some of them. That's my knee-jerk reaction. Some of them.
I think that's my knee-jerk. My knee-jerk is almost no, but I think some of them, yeah, is probably the best way to go. I would say very few of them, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I was reading the latest issue of Nintendo Power. And they have interviews every issue. Nintendo Power is great, guys. You guys got to subscribe to Nintendo Power. It's awesome.
I'm sad that I let my subscription lapse.
Yeah, get another one, man. I love that magazine. It's so good.
I mean, I got my first one. Like, I got like 12 months for $5, and then next they're like, "Do you want to renew for $20 or something?" I'm like, "No, I don't know."
20.
I know, but now, like, now every time I'm in the bathroom, I just have, like...
I have good housekeeping or something. This is
yeah, no, I just have, like, an old-ass issue of Nintendo Power now that's, like, 5-6 months old. I'm just like, oh, I'm going to read these same reviews again.
You got to re-up, man. The $20 is so worth it. But they have interviews every issue.
Yes.
This latest issue, they have Randy Pitchford from Gearbox, which is strange because it's like Gearbox doesn't really make Nintendo games. But that's actually more interesting, I think, the fact that they'll get someone who's a personality like Randy Pitchford in to interview, despite the fact that he's not really making Nintendo games, because he has something to say. So things like this are the things that make Nintendo Power worthwhile. But at any rate, Nintendo Power asked him, like, are video games art? And he said, well, I think that there are different kinds of art, and lots of different video games fall in these different categories. You know, there's commercial art, there's, I don't know, I forget what he called it, expressive or emotive art or something like that. And, I mean, that might be a good point, but I think once you start, I don't know, I feel like something that's designed to make money can have the quality of art. And I think that's different than being, like, art as a noun. Does that make sense?
I think that, like, I think it makes absolutely sense, because I think once you start, like, doing demographic testing and such to make a product, I don't think it's, like, art anymore.
Right.
Like, what if, like, Michelangelo took, like, some 18 to 34-year-olds and, like, I'm working on this statue. What do you think could, like, what could make it appeal to you?
Right, right. And that's how I feel, too. I think once you tread that line into commercial product, it's not really art anymore. And I know some people are going to disagree with that, and that's okay. Anything we say on this podcast is certainly open to debate, even amongst the listeners. You know, it's not definitive. But I feel like commercial products aren't art. They can be artistic. But I don't think that they are art.
What was that Penny Arcade comic that was like, in response to the Ebert thing, and it was like, how could hundreds of artists be working on something and it not be art at the end? And I think
when they're working on something that's called DLC.
Yeah, I think there could be like individual elements in the game that are art. Like, oh, I painted this sky. Skybox or something. That's my skybox. It's very pretty. It's artistic. It's an artist made it.
Yeah.
But I think the overall game itself at the end isn't necessarily art.
Yeah, especially when you have hundreds of artists. Like something like Assassin's Creed has like 400 people working on it. Who's in charge of that vision? No offense to Assassin's Creed. I'm not ragging on it or anything, but like that's a total design by committee game. There's no one at the head of that ship. And I sort of think, like, how can that be art? Like, you're just sort of manufacturing something that, you know, by consensus. That doesn't... But, I mean, maybe there are things that are artistic that are developed by consensus. I don't really know. It's that's a tricky one. But I sort of feel like when you have all these people involved and no, like, unified vision from, like, one or two people...
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have a design by committee thing, and I don't know if that's art. That seems like a commercial product designed to appeal to a specific audience.
That's my stance. And there's also, reading like a lot of just developer interviews, a lot of the times the developers say something like, oh, like is there something that you wish that you could have put in the game? And they always say, yeah, of course there's always something that we wish that we could have put in there. We're never really done. We just have to stop at some point.
Right.
Because there's deadlines and such. And I think, like, art doesn't really work on deadlines. I think you work on it till you're done with it.
Well, it's not even just deadlines. Sometimes, they cut things because, like, oh, focus test groups didn't like this.
Yeah.
I mean, I can understand deadlines. I mean, that's been said of other kinds of art, too, that a piece of art is never finished. You just stop. I mean that's been said by that's been said about things that are different than video games like paintings and things like this. So I mean I think that's true for almost any work of art. It's most art is probably not finished. There's probably things you can do with it, but I don't think that like you pointed out like Michelangelo did not like have like surveys and stuff.
Yeah,
I sort of feel like that's not an artistic vision. That's just again you're creating something by consensus, and that doesn't seem artistic.
And it sort of seems like too, like if you got somebody like to come in and paint a portrait of you and they're like, all right, this is done, this is good, and then you look at it and be like, no, you should maybe make me a little buffer or I don't know make my teeth, I don't know, it's like changing what the artist made too.
Absolutely. And I can't see that as art. And, I mean, maybe there's probably people listening to this going, oh, my God, now you're just picking it apart. But, I mean, I sort of think that's the point. I think, like, we wouldn't be having this discussion if art wasn't important. People wouldn't even – if art was not important, people would not care whether video games are art. And we care because art is important. And we want to feel like video games are important because we spend so much of our time and money on it. I mean, I get that. So that's why we're picking this apart, because clearly art is important to us. But art, if art is important, then I don't feel like anything can be art. Because I think when you sit in there like, oh, well, artists worked on this, therefore, it, you know, I mean, I think people try to take art and then say everything is art. Like, oh, this cool breeze is art. Maybe it is. I don't know. Maybe it's art to you. I think people just take things that they like and they say it's art. That, I mean, I'm sure nobody looks at a dead animal carcass that got run over on the road and says, oh, that's art.
I tell you, taxidermy.
Because, I mean, maybe in some weird, gangly way, like, that is art. Because that's, you know, part of life, I guess. But I think people take, like, these very banal things and they call them art because they find them pleasant and important to them. That's fine. But, I mean, I think, you know, in the greater scope of things, I think what makes art is A, intent, and then B, acceptance. So I think someone has to intend on something to be art. I think someone has to intend to be artistic, and then the general audience has to accept that as art. Because nothing is art by its own merit. Art is just, it's a human construct. It's like time. Like, time doesn't actually exist. Like, we just gave meaning to seconds and minutes and hours and things. Time doesn't actually exist. It's a construct. And that's like art. And so it has to have, you know, these rules, I think.
Also, what's hard about video games is art is that, I mean, the player can do kind of whatever he wants in there. Which,
I think that's the art.
And I'm not saying it's not. I'm going to say that it is, actually, and that's like a very hard thing to do right.
Yes.
For a video game artist, like the whole like gameplay.
Gameplay is the art.
Yeah, the connection, I think, between the player and the game in there is, I mean, that's something like no other really artist has to do, because a lot of art isn't interactive, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I was going to say this for later in the discussion, but I mean, that's, I feel like gameplay is the artistic quality of a game. I feel like, I mean, yes, it can look pretty, it can sound pretty, but these aren't things that are intrinsic to like a game. The interactivity is. And I think making an enjoyable game where the controls are butter and you feel like, you know, you want to play the game. Like, I think, like, Tetris is art. That, to me, is video game art. Like, if I were to point to any game and say, this is art, Tetris would be it. Because that is a sublime experience, I think, when it comes to interactivity. It's perfect.
That's a really good example, actually.
I mean, Tetris is perfect as an interactive piece of art. And because I think a lot of people go like, oh, Okami's art because Okami's pretty. Well, I don't think that's the best way to look at it. You can look at it if you like. I ain't going to stop you. But I don't think that's the best way. I don't think just looking at the visuals and saying the visuals are gorgeous, like, this is art. You know, I would defer to something like Tetris and say, like, this is art.
I would say the visuals themselves are art in the game. But, like, the game as a whole, doesn't necessarily make the game art.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. I think that, yeah, exactly. Exactly. So... But I think, you know, one of the reasons why I find it difficult to accept video games as art, because as I said, part of it needs to be intent, I think. I mean, maybe I'm wrong in that. Maybe this is all open to interpretation, of course, by everyone else. So maybe I'm wrong. Maybe art doesn't need to have intent. But I think it does need acceptance. I think it needs acceptance to be art. Nothing is art on its own terms. It has to be art because we call it art because humans made up art. It can't just be art for no good reason. And I want to make sure I'm making sense in that.
No, and, absolutely.
Okay. So when video games come out, the problem is people complain about how long they are. They don't have enough modes. There's too much DLC. Like, people levy complaints at these things that have to deal with a commercial product. Very rare. People say, you know, I want, video games are definitely art, but then when they discuss video games, they don't discuss them in artistic merits. They don't discuss them in artistic terms. They complain about, like, the length, or matchmaking is broken, you know? So, shotguns overpowered. So, you know,
they don't... think, like, multiplayer modes like that could be art?
Possibly, but not in any conventional multiplayer mode that I've seen. it depends on how – I think it really comes back to how you interact. Most of our multiplayer modes are shooting each other in the face. So I don't find that to be an artistic expression of our interactivity. So I don't think so, but possibly.
And then, like, all the rewarding and perks at the end that you're given, I don't know. I think that sort of nullifies.
Yeah, it's all carrot on.
Artistic. Yeah, it's all about, yeah, it's carrot on a stick, like you're going to say.
So, I don't know. Yeah, I'd be interested in seeing a multiplayer mode that I felt was artistic. But
how about two-player Tetris? Does that count?
Maybe. But I just think the general audience says that video games are art, but they don't accept them as art. Like you know, we talked about this Uncharted 3 review from Eurogamer, where someone dared to look at something like Uncharted in as an experience and you know, wrote his review that way. And and then everyone's like, oh my god, you didn't even talk about the multiplayer and how long it is. And you gave it an 8. And heaven forbid, someone...
Cookie Monster is really angry. I know.
Me on Uncharted. So, you know, when it comes down the line, like, you know, you develop these things as a product, and they're marketed as a product, and they're critiqued like a product. You know, I wrote this article about how, you know, reviewing games based on how much they cost is not a good idea. And I gave an example of IGN's review of Resident Evil The Mercenaries 3D as an example, and that's why it's not a good idea, because that game was half price, you know, for like a whole week at Best Buy, and that review is no longer helpful. But the key thing is here is that whole review just complained about the fact that there was not enough stuff versus, you know, how much it cost. That sounds like a commercial product. We're still reviewing things like a commercial product, and anyone who dares to do it otherwise gets, you know, bitched at, like the, you know, this Eurogamer writer did. And then they come down the pike, and then the audience treats them like a product. So from beginning to end, these things are looked at like as a product. For the most part, there are, you know, some exceptions.
You know, I think some of the games that might truly be art, though, I think reviewers stop reviewing them as a product, like something like a flower or something. I don't think anybody was complaining about the length or...
That's a good point.
Or the ease or anything like that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they just talked about the experience.
That's a good point. But, I mean, then we're creating double standards, I think. Well, maybe we are. Not. I mean, I don't know, because is it a double standard? Can we accept the fact that some games are art and some
That's
games are commercial
products? That's what I'm saying.
And reflect that in our reviews and how we talk about games?
I think, naturally, like, games that are art sort of just brings out an art, more artistic review from people than games that are products.
Do you think it's impossible to review something like Uncharted 3 on its artistic merits, then? As an interactive, you know,
person. I haven't really played the game, but we'll just say Uncharted 2 or something.
Yeah, let's give, you know, the best example, because I haven't played Uncharted 3 either, so.
No, I think the Uncharted series could be reviewed on its artistic merits, absolutely.
Okay.
I think there's enough... Actually, it would be kind of hard, though. Like, some of the stuff that you're going to want to nitpick is, like you said, like, multiplayer modes or the length.
Yeah.
Do you think, like, the flow of the game, that's more artistic, right?
I think, pacing, I think, because pace, I mean, that's very important to say, like, movies. Now, movies are a completely different medium. But I think it's also, it can be important to video games as well. I mean, you want to slog through doing bullshit, you know. I mean, that's one of the big reasons why I don't really like sandbox games, because I feel like I'm forced to do a lot of shitty bullshit, boring padding quests and roaming around and shit. Uh-huh. I don't like that. Uncharted 2 had terrific pacing. I couldn't put that fucking game down.
Yeah, and I think you could definitely review something like Uncharted on the experience and not... on all the different technical aspects of it.
But, yeah, I don't know. Maybe some games you can't look at them that way. I don't know. It's a really tricky topic. That's sort of why it's such an interesting... That's why it's worth having the discussion, because I don't think that there's a blanket answer. People just, you know, video games are definitely art. Yeah, well, defend that. And they can't. Oh, because there's artists, you know, and... I don't know. I just think a lot of the answers that people typically give while they can certainly, you know, they can be worthwhile answers for that particular person, I just think to the larger discussion, they're not worthwhile. You know, it's a pretty important discussion, and if we really want video games elevated to that level, I think we have to look at them that way, and we can't always, like, look at it like, oh, this game, my art has to be 12 hours long, and it can't be 8. We have to stop doing that.
It's a product on its own. It is what it is, and you look at, I don't know, it's if a game does what it seeks out to do, it doesn't matter what the length is and such not and whatnot, because it's an artistic vision.
Yeah,
is what it is.
And either that sometimes. Vision is executed well or it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that vision entails a tightly paced, and I'm using the word tightly paced very loosely with something that's 8 hours long. But sometimes that entails a tightly paced 8-hour single-player campaign.
And I think a lot of times you can feel when there's padding just for padding's sake.
Oh, God, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And I think that cuts into the heart of the game.
Yes. I like to see games do more interactive, like, things that are typically regulated to cutscenes. I mean, I've brought this up before. You know, Fable 3's hand-holding thing seemed like a really worthless gimmick, and it's not used to its full extent, so I can see where people come from with that. But, I mean, I've already recounted my story with, like, holding someone's hand, and then she got attacked by Bulverines, and that sucked. I was actually kind of, like, not really upset, but kind of upset. That was a shitty situation, and that happened because there was this emergent gameplay holding someone's hand. Now Eco did that with holding someone's hand. I don't think I've played that game, so I can't really say how well it's implemented there. And
I like it a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people don't like it because what you're doing is just guiding a person through the game, but I think it establishes an emotional connection.
Right. And normally games do this by showing you through cutscenes. And in a medium where interactivity is the only thing it has over every other medium, which is a very valuable thing to have, to just show me shit in cutscenes is fucking boring.
It's basically like switching between two different mediums.
Really? Yeah, it is.
Like,
not that cutscenes in and of themselves are bad, just their overuse and how they're used. Not their crutch is what they are.
These mm-hmm. things. I think it's an excuse for. I don't know. Like, a lot of times I hear developers say that they couldn't do something in gameplay, and I'm not sure like how much they actually try to do such a thing. Excuse me. Hold on. My throat's going.
It's okay. My nose is very stuffy, so I've been, like, sniffling.
All right. But, I think it's like you said, I think it's a crutch. I think it's something that developers use so that they could avoid maybe trying to do something else through the gameplay.
Yeah. Or they just give you a cutscene and they put a giant A button over it and quick time event. It's interactive now.
Yeah.
So, now I would like to see more things like holding hands. I would like to see things like that. How they're implemented, I don't know. I'm not a game designer. Okay, if I thought about it, maybe I can come up with some ideas.
But, you know, I just thought of
what's that?
Like, well, obviously, there's different opinions in art, whether it's good or bad, and right. That reminds me of the Shadow of the Colossus controls, where me and Chris felt like it added to the experience.
And I don't. But, I was just thinking about that earlier, and I look at that, and I feel like that to me is not. I feel like that takes me out of the game, and it's hard for me to look at that as art. Everyone's like, oh, Shadow Colossus art. Like, I'm like, this thing's a pain in the ass to fucking play. Like, it's interactivity, the thing that I feel is art in a game, is lessened by these wonky controls.
But I feel it adds to the experience because it makes it more like a struggle, like actually climbing
and
these colossi and such.
I think that's a great discussion. I think that's where we need to get with video games. Shadow of the Colossus is an excellent example. I think we need to get from the subject, you know, our video games are, to debating, like, about the artistic elements in a game that is considered art.
Yes.
I think that's where the much more interesting discussion needs to be, but we need to get off this, like, 8-hour campaigns, no multiplayer maps, $15 for DLC. We need to get off that stuff and get to the point where we can discuss stuff like, you know, the controls in Shadow of the Colossus and debate how they add to the art. That's where we need to get. That's where I want to be. That's a good point.
I agree, absolutely.
But, I guess that's all I have to say about it. I mean, there are a lot of opinions on this subject. And I just, the only reason why I think it's worth bringing up and the reason why we're sort of beating it into the ground is that it needs to be beaten to the ground. We really need to discuss this and see where we're at as a medium. You know, nobody wants to feel like they're wasting time. And they want to feel like what they do is important. So, you know, and art feels like it's important. So we desperately want to be art. But, like, I think we need to understand why we deserve that title. And I think that probably has to involve some shifts in attitude and how we view things.
I'm actually glad Roger Ebert brought this whole thing up, actually, because it's brought about a lot of interesting discussion.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, all I ask is think about this. Think about why video games deserve to be art, because they do deserve to be art. But I'm just, like I said, I'm just not sure whether we're there yet.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. So, if you have anything you'd like to add, be sure you can follow up with comments on this article on TeamLess.net or shoot us something on our Facebook wall.
Actually, speaking of video games as art, a very pretty and artfully made game I'm going to be giving away.
And what game is that, sir?
That is Muramasa the Demon Blade for the Nintendo Wii.
Excellent game.
Yes. And if you'd like to be entered for a chance to win the game, just go to the comments section for episode 61. And I guess just talk about anything, really.
Yeah. Don't be a dick.
Don't be a dick. Add to the art discussion.
Yeah, there you go. Add to the art discussion, and we'll add you in. And when you comment, be sure you use your real email address so we know it's you. No one can see this email address but us. So.
Yep. And I'll contact the winner after a week or so.
Sounds good. Let's do some listener input. As always, if you want to get involved with the podcast, and we welcome everyone's viewpoint as long as they're not an asshole, check out facebook.com/TVNLust. Today, we have Colton. He says, lately, I've been feeling like I have so many games on my backlog that I still haven't had time to play. Do you guys ever feel overwhelmed with games? Or you feel bad that you bought a game but never even played it? Or have you played every game that you own?
Basically, I'm like under a pile of games I've never played.
I've played almost every game I own. There are some that I haven't, and I get around to everything eventually, but then, you know, I add more games to the pile. I'll eventually get around to them. It's an endless cycle. I have to completely stop buying games for like 6 months to get around to possibly everything, but I do get around to everything, and there aren't that many games that I haven't played. So I feel bad that I haven't played those few, but not too bad because I will get to them. Do I feel overwhelmed? No, because my end goal isn't to always finish games. I think I've talked about this before. I'm not always in it. Some games just aren't worth finishing. But I'm there to experience as much as I can. And usually that ends up probably being about, you know, roughly like 2 hours or so per game. Older games, that means I usually end up finishing them because they're not very long.
What? Games only like 30 minutes? Screw that.
I know, that's not art. No, so...
I never regret like buying a game that I haven't gotten around to playing because I, like you said, I eventually get around to playing them all. So
right. Andrew asks, "What's the hardest game you have finished?" Mine is Devil May Cry 3. I don't know. People remember this, but I don't.
I've beaten all three Ninja Gaiden games on NES.
There you go. That's a pretty good one.
Those are pretty hard.
Shigato says, what do you guys think about all this DLCs we have for games lately? It feels like we are buying incomplete games at the store just to buy the complete game later with DLC. I miss the old Famicom, the Dreamcast, PS2 days when all you did with a complete game was open the package. Yeah, and those games were, like, really short. And
I think there's a difference. I think, like, DLC that is ready to go day one, but it's, like, split up across different retailers and such, I think that's bullshit.
Yeah.
If a game comes out and then the developers continue to work on it post-release, then I think that's fine. I think that adds to the game.
What do you think about DLC that's on the disc? Because this actually just happened with Gears of War 3 or some, I don't know, some mode or map pack was already on the disc. The major component of it was. And I think that was, you know, I think their defense was the same thing as the BioShock 2 defense. It's because, so that people who don't have it can play with people who do have it.
Personally, I think it's bullshit that it's there, but it's not included unless you buy it. But at the same time, I think the publishers have the right to charge whatever they think that their product costs.
Yeah.
If they want to see that as a separate mode that costs extra money, then I guess that's their right. But I think it's still, I think it's kind of an FU to customers.
You see, I don't like it either. And I often defend these things, and people think, like, oh, man, you must be, like, a corporate whipping boy. I just understand why these things happen. That doesn't mean that I like them. I want to clear the air on that. I probably will every episode, because I'm probably going to be accused every episode of this. But I understand why it's there. Like, as long as my core $60 experience doesn't feel lessened by not having that content. Like, people loved Gears of War 3 until just yesterday when they found out this content was on the disc. Now, I was like, Gears of War 3 is the biggest pile of shit ever. And, like, if you didn't feel ripped off yesterday, you shouldn't feel ripped off today, I don't think.
And I think it's an exclusive thing. I think you could still like the game that you paid for, but still be mad that there's this complete extra mode on there.
Yeah. But, I mean, of course, this goes back to what I said earlier. People take this shit so personally. They're like, oh, fuck Epic and fuck this. So, like, these are not – a lot of these people are not reasonable. Like, they're not – yes, yes, I do still enjoy the Gears of War 3. But I am displeased with – no one's doing that. So
that would be my stance.
No, I'm not happy with it either. But I sort of feel like – because these things are hashed out way in advance. They develop the game. And what I mean by the game, I mean the thing that you paid for $60, the license that you paid for $60. Uh-huh. They developed that game and developed that around making money off that for $60. And they developed this piece over here for making $10 or $15 or whatever it is. And this content is actually going to be free at the end of the month or something like that. Like, it's just timed for people to pay for. If you want it later, it'll be free. So it's not even that big of a deal in this case. So this is part of how they're going to make profit from the game. Like, they've already hashed out and said, this content is worth this. And I look at, like, Gears of War 3 and I go, well, it's a pretty big game. I don't see how I can be unhappy all of a sudden by this. And that's why I'm rarely, like, that upset about these things. If I felt like my core experience was somehow robbed, I would probably be upset. But I generally don't feel that way. Generally, I still feel like that my core experience most of the time is still worth the money that I paid for it. Uh-huh. I don't feel ripped off. And the way I look at it is this, that they're just using, it's still DLC, quote unquote, because it's really not, you're just downloading a key, but it's still, we'll just call it additional content. It's still additional content. They're just using the disc as an alternative delivery method rather than, you know, shooting it down the interweb tubes. I mean, is that really that egregious?
See, it sort of makes sense to me, but I still want to.
I'm still angry, goddammit!
Yeah, I mean.
No, I get it. I mean, I guess you can look at it logically and still be upset by it.
It's sort of like you own the contents right there, but you just can't get to it.
Yeah, but you don't own the content. Like, that's the thing. You don't. You own a piece of plastic and the license to play the content in a way that it's described.
That's fucking bullshit. I hate the whole license.
And that's the way it's been since the beginning.
Yeah.
All software has been like that. You know?
I think it's really dumb, though.
It's not
you don't buy the game, you buy a license to play the game.
Yeah, you do. And you know what? I don't like it either. Don't get me wrong. It's just, I don't think it's that bad. Like, I just think that, like, oftentimes there is day one DLC. And yeah, and it's stored on, you know, Microsoft servers or whatever, as opposed to on your disk. Now you got to take up all that space on your hard drive. This is really no different. It's just that it's on the disk. It's actually better, really, when you stop and think about it. Would have been? I mean, if they delivered it over the internet, that you actually did download it. I mean, I still think people would have been upset then too. Like, it's really like a lose-lose.
I don't like the idea of day one DLC though. I think.
But what if they? I mean, how would you know? What if they held it for like a week, couple of weeks, whatever? I mean, at what point would you feel comfortable? And how would you even know that they worked on that post?
I guess they'll just have to be honest. I mean, I feel what's there, what's offered, what's on the disc should be factored into the cost. If they release the game with that DLC on there and went, well, it's still worth like $5 extra, and then they charge you $65 for the game, then people would be complaining about that.
Right.
They really can't win.
They were just complaining about Resident Evil Revelations. We were just talking about this.
Uh-huh.
And no one's going to be happy. I mean, the thing is, like, game development costs have skyrocketed in recent years. Gone through the... It used to be that two guys in a fucking basement can make a game. They still can, and we call it Super Meat Boy, and it's awesome, but it's not, you know, it's not the same thing. It used to be that, like, one guy made Yara's Revenge. One guy made that game.
With Resident Evil Revelations, imagine if they released the game, but they locked... They released the game for $40, but they locked the multiplayer mode for, like, $10. I think... Do you think that would piss off more people or less people?
Yeah, people would still be angry. People just... I think a lot of people, not everyone, a lot of people are upset and they have a legitimate viewpoint on it, but I think a lot of people just... They like to be angry because it feels like it gives them a purpose.
I think they're just used to... I don't... It's kind of mean, Craig.
It is. I know it's mean, but do you... I mean, my problem is I read the comment sections on fucking websites. That's my... I don't know if you do that.
Yeah, no. I get sick of that. I can't... No. Yeah.
You might feel the same way. But like I said, it's not everyone. It's not everyone. There are people that are upset and have legitimate viewpoints. I fully understand and respect that. But a lot of people are just – they're just angry. It's totally irrational.
Yeah, no, I think a lot of people – they're just used to like one thing. They're used to paying so much for a game and then when that changes –
That might be it too. But, you know, everybody wants bigger games. They want better games. They want, you know, better voice acting and these cinematic qualities. People want all this stuff and – You know, cost for this shit is skyrocketed. It's crazy how expensive games are to make now. And there are no box office returns or anything like that for, like, a game. It's just that one game that they put out for $60. So, you know, as I've said before, they're trying all these different ways to deliver a really good experience for the $60 or whatever, but then still make money in other ways, whether it's, you know, charging an extra $10 for the multiplayer mode if you bought it used, or these, you know, these special editions, or through DLC. And then it begs the question, like, if all that shit was on the disc, would you be willing to pay $80 for all that shit? Would you be willing to pay a higher price for your core game because it had extra stuff? Because that's, you know, that's the other option. Or you can just have less things and fucking deal with it.
The industry sort of running itself ragged. I mean, it's both consumers and developers and publishers.
Everyone's to blame. Absolutely.
I mean, like, the developers make a game, and then, like, consumers want something that, like, is even bigger and can top that. But the budget is so ridiculous. I mean, then the publishers make that game, and the consumers want even more. And, I mean, the budgets are just spiraling out of control, where if, like, even if a game doesn't sell, like, 2 million copies, then people start losing their jobs. I mean, it's ridiculous. I think the companies and consumers are all just – they're just going spiraling out of control with the budgets.
This is why I play a lot of B-level games, because I find them to be the most interesting. But I'm starting to see three distinct classes of games emerge with very little in between. You know, we're having these AAA big blockbuster games. We're having downloadable games that are becoming increasingly expensive and increasingly complex, to be fair. But we're having these downloadable games like, say, like Limbo and stuff like that that are really kind of cool. And then your third class are like like iOS games, like mobile games, like simple like Facebook games and things like that. And these are the three classes of games that get the most attention. Most things in between really don't. Like, one of my favorite games last year was like Majin and the Forsaken Kingdom. Awesome game. That game dropped in price before it even came out because that's how little interest there was in Majin in the first place. But it's a really cool game. And I think because of all these big budgets and what people demand from particular kinds of games, that's why you're seeing these three distinct classes emerge. And these classes are becoming more complex and more costly. Like, downloadable games used to cost $5. We got, like, Geometry Wars for $5. Now you're paying $15, $20 for these downloadable games.
You know. If it continues to go at this rate, I wonder how, like, sustainable this business model is.
It's not. That's why I often buy a lot of the B-grade games, because I find that that's where gaming lives a lot. Like, you know, I find that the most compelling and interesting part of the medium. Because, I mean, I look at really what's great about downloadable games, like Xbox Live Arcade or whatever, is that people, you know, garage developers can get in on that. Two people like Team Meat can make an awesome game. And that's how gaming used to be made. It used to be the vision of like three people who sat down and made a game themselves and made a commercial retail game that they put on store shelves. That's how it used to be. It's not like that.
You beat like an NES game. It's like, five names to go by.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's cool that we're able to do that again. But with these costs going out of, like, Team Meat almost killed themselves making, like, Super Meat Boy. Like, you read, like, their story, and it's, like, fucking, like, crazy that they're not dead. And that's where it's going, because the costs and the expectations of downloadable games are going through the roof. I mean, we're seeing the same thing, even, you know, with the quote-unquote smaller games or whatever, we're starting to see the same things emerge from there that we see in these big blockbusters, and things are going to get more expensive. There's DLC for downloadable games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're starting to see that same pattern emerge much quicker. You know, it's almost like a microcosm. And, you know, I don't know. We can't demand these things and not think that it doesn't cost money. And developers probably should scale back their budgets and their visions on the same note.
And then the consumers will be like, oh, this doesn't have this and this, though. So it's like you can't win. Yeah,
you can't win. You can't win. It's a really tough situation. But, I mean, that's why DLC exists. And if I don't want DLC, I don't buy it. I actually don't buy a lot of DLC. I buy some, but not really a lot.
No. Me neither.
But it's an interesting situation, and sometimes I'm kind of scared to see where it's going to go.
Mm-hmm.
Josh says, the VGAs are coming around the corner. I was wondering, would you like to discuss the pros and cons of the awards ceremony? I can't think of any pros, to be perfectly honest. I think some categories, like most anticipated game, could be just thrown away. I agree. I think the VGAs should be considered the Oscars in gaming and have the same categories every year, not change them every year to include stuff like Best Dressed Assassin. Yeah, because that's just Best Game fueled by Dew.
Yeah, it's just bullshit categories.
That's the problem. It would be awesome if they were like the Oscars.
Like, most anticipated game, what are you rewarding there? Rewarding like a marketing campaign?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly
what's being rewarded. Bullshit.
It is.
That's not an art.
No.
See, this is why people go, like, games aren't art.
I think the VGAs, yeah. I mean, I wrote an article about this last year. Me and, like, 80 million other people. It's not really that original. But I did write an article last year about my grievances with the VGAs. And they just don't – there's nothing – people who don't play video games and, like, Roger Ebert and don't consider them art and look at something like the VGAs and go, like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, it's a sideshow. It's not the Oscars. It's a sideshow. There's advertisements everywhere, and you got Samuel L. Jackson, who don't even know the name of games and shit, and
fucking exclusive game reveal trailers, just more ads from... It's weird.
Yeah. And I'm always weird about how they segregate games. Like, I don't really segregate games. Like, I mean, yes, there are differences between a downloadable game and a retail game. Like, we know this. But, like, when you're sort of, like, weighing the artistic merits of them, the experience of them, I don't see any, like, Flower, you know, we talk about Flower. Flower is one of my favorite games this generation, period. And, and that's put in a category, like, best downloadable game. And, like, why can't that go against, like, the other guys? Because, of course, it would get ripped to shreds because everyone just wants to vote for big-budget AAA games. But
I remember IGN one year gave World of Goo best Wii game overall.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. But I wish there was more thinking like that. Because to me, Flower definitely goes up against anything that comes on a disc. No problem. There aren't many downloadable games that do that, but there are some that really do challenge full retail games, I think.
I think Josh is right, though. They made it more like the Oscars and had a set categories and such every year.
And a little more prestige. Yeah, absolutely. But I feel like they're just... It's just a sideshow. It's an ad,
uh-huh.
You know, and I mean, it's like the same shit. Like, you can predict like the games that are going to be in there. Like I wrote my article like last year. It's the same game nominated over and over again. Like, you just take Call of Duty and just like best music, best male, you know, character, best in it. It's in every single fucking category.
Yeah.
And that's not really that interesting. It's just the same. You can guess. Like, this year, I mean, I guess Skyrim's going to be nominated for something, probably a bunch of somethings. Call of Duty is, probably Battlefield, maybe Deus Ex. Like, it's just going to be the same shit nominated over and over. You can totally predict because they're just not very interesting in their selections.
Best character is weird, too. I mean, like, shouldn't that fall under writing or voice acting or something?
I don't know. They do have, like, best male and best female and stuff like that. I don't know.
That's weird. I don't know.
But, yeah, that's how I feel. Jordan, what?
No, like, what? Did you give, like, an award to the character? Shouldn't it just be, like, the person who designed it or wrote their lines or something?
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe his voice actor. I don't really remember. But I don't know. Yeah, because who would get that award? But, I mean, that's just the thing. If you can give awards to, like, hypothetical shit, like, then what really, what good are these awards?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure most people watch them for, like, the
favorite
new game
breakfast
reveals
cereal
and stuff
mascot,
anyway.
Toucan Sam. Flies on stage. Follow my nose! Yeah. Awesome. Jordan asks, tips for an up-and-coming podcaster, please. This is what I was saying earlier.
Don't,
you might
don't
suck
be,
first.
No, don't be discouraged.
Don't be
discouraged if you, like, suck at first, because...
Yeah, you probably will.
You probably will.
And you'll probably get better if you keep at it. I think we've gotten better. I think this is actually a listenable podcast.
So you're saying it was terrible, Craig?
It wasn't great, but...
It wasn't great. It was just unlistenable.
There you go. So, yeah, I mean, if you're not very good at first, just keep at it. I mean, very few people start something and are awesome at it right away. The problem is a lot of people see other people doing something, whether it's writing or painting, doing a podcast, making videos, whatever it is, playing sports, and look at that person, oh, man, that guy's so great. Looks like he's having fun. I want to do that, too. And then you start, and you're not very good. You're not going to be that guy. He's probably been doing it for, like, years. So... Mm-hmm. You need to pace yourself. You're not going to be like that guy, and it's okay that you're not that guy.
Also, you might get some, like, hate comments at first, too.
Yeah, we definitely get those. Andrew asks, hey, Craig, I've heard you mention before you are a fan of Wes Anderson. I am. I was just wondering which your favorite of his films is. For me, it switches between Rushmore and Tenenbaums. However, I do really like Bottle Rocket. For me, my favorite Anderson film is actually Darjeeling Limited. And I know that's probably not...
Really?
That one resonated with me the most. I mean, I look at something like Rushmore and Tenenbaums, and I feel like they are probably objectively better films. And I really like them. Like, that's not to say anything ill of Rushmore and Tenenbaums. Like, I really enjoy those movies a lot. I like Fantastic Mr. Fox, too.
Mm-hmm.
But Darjeeling Limited resonated with me more, I think, than those films did.
Yeah, I think my favorite's somewhere between The Life Aquatic and Fantastic Mr. Fox, so I'm probably not one to talk either.
Well, those ones are awesome, too.
I mean, they are, but, I mean, they're usually not considered his best.
Right, yeah, usually it's like Rushmore and Tenenbaums, yeah.
Yeah.
But, no, Darjeeling Limited resonated with me more, so I'm going to have to go with that one for my favorite. But, again, I mean, I do feel like Rushmore and Tenenbaums, like, if I was trying to be more objective about it, I would probably consider them better films. And I do really like them, but...
Yeah.
Chris says, first off, thanks for the recommendations for Genesis and SNES games 2 podcasts ago. I probably should have told you I already had, like, Mario, Metroid, Earthbound, Kirby, but I got the ones I didn't have that you suggested. Well, good. I hope you enjoy them. Anyways, 2 questions. 1, with all these games that have been released and are still on their way, which games do you think will be overlooked? Interesting question.
The King of Fighters 13 will be overlooked.
Probably will be. The core gang. Out. The core gang and Fishing Resort will be overlooked.
Fishing Resort, that's gonna suck.
Are you getting the plastic controller?
There's a plastic controller?
Yeah, they released for $30 because the game costs $20. For $30 you get just a little rig that turns your Wii Remote and Nunchuck into a fishing controller.
What would I search on Amazon to see?
Just type in Fishing Resort, it should be in there somewhere. That's what I have pre-ordered, is that set. So I'm pretty excited for that.
But, wait, it comes with the game and the...
Yeah, for $30, yeah.
Oh, I didn't even see that. See, I already had the 20. I already had the game by itself pre-ordered, but...
Yeah, cancel that and get the controller.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to. It's only $10 more.
Yeah. So, Kirby's Return to Dreamland is probably going to be overlooked. Probably both Kirby games, actually.
Oh, Mass Attack is so good.
Yeah, it is really good. I really enjoy it. So, there are probably going to be quite a few games that are overlooked. Because there are a lot of big names out there, and like things like Fishing Resort's not a big name, but
I wonder if Rayman's going to get overlooked, especially for the $60 price that's releasing it.
You know, I almost overlooked that. I pre-ordered that. I actually haven't bought a game in like 3 weeks. I know that's weird. People are like, what, Craig? By the time my next game that I'll buy is Super Mario 3D Land, and that'll be the first game that I will purchase. It'll be about a month because I bought Skylanders, and that came out like on like the 16th. Or something like that. Mario Land comes out third. So about a month, I will not have purchased a game. And because I was trying to be a little more frugal. And because I just spent $3,000 going on the other side of the world, and I got birthdays and Christmas and shit. So I just said, those games will still be there later. Fuck, I forgot what I was saying. And Rayman Origins. Rayman Origins was a game that I was going to initially pass on. But of course, that game's going to be there later. I could probably buy that game in like a year for like $20.
Yeah, a lot of those Ubisoft games seem to drop pretty fast.
Right, but I kept watching videos of it, and I'm like, and I was playing Rayman 2 at the time, and I'm like, nah, I can't pass on this. Like, I'm really going to enjoy this game, and I really want to play it pretty soon, and not buying a game for like a whole month, I think that makes me entitled to getting Rayman Origins.
Yeah, and I almost passed on it too, but it just looks way too good.
Yeah, it does look really awesome. But I hope it doesn't get overlooked, because it does look really good. Two, if you could bring back one video game developing studio, which one would you choose and why? One that comes to mind for me is Pandemic, so they can make Mercenaries 3, which would be awesome. I think that was called Mercenaries, Mercs Incorporated, and I would love to see that myself.
Who's died recently that I care about? No, I'm trying to think of what studios.
If I could think about, like, if I could sit here and think about the studios that have come and gone, I could probably have a better answer. Sometimes I would like to bring studio, like, sometimes studios aren't dead. I would just like them to make other things. Like, I would love for Rare to, like, go back and, like, make Rare games and not Kinect Sports.
And I would like BioWare to make some more action games instead of dialogue trees.
Yeah, that's true, too. Because I like Rare. I think, you know, a lot of people rag on Rare, but man, like Banjo-Kazooie, Nuts and Bolts is good, Cameo is good, Viva Pinata was good. We can discuss the merits of Perfect Dark Zero, but I think that they still made good games, and they could still continue to make good games, given the chance. But, you know, I don't know, I don't really want to play Kinect Sports. I want to play Cameo 2 or something.
Yeah. No, I don't know. I'm not even going to answer this question. I can't think of it right now.
Yeah, it is a tough question. Pandemic's a good one, though. I like to see Mercs, Inc. John asks, you're going to a horror movie marathon, and each person is asked to bring one movie. Which do you bring? I think we talked about this. Like, just not into...
anything with, like, Kathy Bates nudity in it. That's terrifying, nudity. Right?
Does she get naked in any movies?
I'm pretty sure she... there's this one movie with Jack Nicholson where I'm pretty sure she gets naked.
Really? Does Jack Nicholson get naked? Because that might offset it.
I don't know if he does or not. Let's see.
You can't handle the dong!
Like I said, I don't watch a lot of horror movies. I don't know.
Nah, me neither. I like Paranormal Activity, so I guess I'll bring one of those. Whatever.
All right, you can do that.
I'll bring
the Land Before Time 7.
Invasion of the Tiny Sauruses.
You know the subtitles.
Cole says, hey, Cupcake, what do you think is the most overrated video game developer? I'd have to say BioWare and Bethesda. I don't like using the term overrated. It's a term I shy away from.
Because a lot of times... people think that means that, like, you think they suck,
right?
But a lot of times you don't. You think that they're still really good, but just actually overrated.
Right. I mean, if we're going to use the strict definition and say that they are held to a higher regard than I think that they're worth, BioWare might be one of them, sure.
I'm going to say Bungie.
Bungie probably, too, yeah. They made some solid games, but they're not... I don't think the Halo games are, like, this amazing earth-shattering experience or anything.
Yeah, they're not, like, end-all, be-all of games where I think a lot of people...
They're pretty good, and they got better throughout the years, I mean, but...
Yeah, they are good. They're good.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, going with the strict definition of overrated. But, yeah, I mean, that's why I shy away from it, because it's become synonymous with suck. And I don't like that, and I don't want to... I think most video games and video game developers, there's a lot more nuance than just epic or suck. I think there's a lot of discussion to be had about things, and I think I don't like using that term. Azam has a lot of messages here. So everything else is from Azam. What video game series would you guys like to see on the To Kill list? Are we to assume that is like a series that we would like to see get the axe?
Yeah, that's what I'm...
Okay. Yeah. None. I mean, if people are making money from it and people in the audience is enjoying it, none. I like to see video games have less influence and regard in the industry because I think it's dangerous to have just a couple of franchises be as important as they are. But as far as getting axed, none.
I think games that are wearing thin could maybe, I hope they like take a break and get their shit together and maybe release something once they actually have something really good to show instead of just hashing out a yearly update.
Yeah, that's a good, yeah. But you don't want to see them killed. You just want to see them take a break and...
Nah, I don't. There's no video games that like I hate so much that I like want to see them stop.
Right? Yeah, me neither. Yeah, I mean, if people are enjoying them, even if it's not me, then that's fine. What do you guys think about the Kevin Butler PlayStation Vita ad that just came out?
I have not seen it.
I don't. I don't really like Kevin Butler ads. I did it for, like, the first couple ones. You're like, oh, this is slightly amusing, but...
Well, that's sort of me with, like, Geico commercials. They used to be like, oh, but now I see them like fucking lizard. I don't care anymore.
Quit switching the Geico. Shut the fuck up. I Kevin Butler is a weird one, because he became sort of like this cultural icon, but I don't like the in-your-face advertising. I'm not really receptive to that. Especially when the advertising is not necessarily used to talk up your product, but used to talk down someone else's, which is what Kevin Butler sometimes does.
Nah, I think it's fine. Some good old-fashioned mudslinging.
Yeah. I don't like it. Tell me what's awesome about your product. Don't tell me what's bad about the other guy's product that I probably already paid money for. Like, you're almost insulting me at that point.
What's good about their product is they have a smart, alecky spokesperson who can tell you what's bad about the other product.
Okay. Tell that to Marcus.
Poor Marcus.
What do you guys think about Sony saying that they are not happy about how the PS3 does its updates and they plan to make the updates a lot faster? I don't know if they've said that. I haven't caught that
quote. I mean, if they have said that, then good.
Good, because their updates suck.
Yeah, they're not good updates at all.
And they plan to make the updates a lot faster. Well, I hope they do that. I think a lot of it is designed around, like, the OS. I think the OS is just not designed to take the updates like the 360 does. Uh-huh. And PSN's probably not set up the same way Live is. So if they can do it, awesome. I'm all for that. But it's good that if they did admit that it's not very good, that's good on them for admitting their mistake or, you know, whatever. So that's good, too. And also, Craig, I think you forgot that you own the Sly Cooper trilogy for PS3. Oh, no, I didn't forget that. I own it.
No, you did forget it.
Did I?
Last episode, you said that you didn't think you owned any of the HD collections.
Oh, okay. Oh, thank you. Yes, that's right. I did. Yeah, that's a good point. I do. Yeah. Thank you for pointing that out, Azam, because I forgot that I forgot. I just bought a PS3. What are some games you would recommend? I really don't know what games to buy. There is so many. My favorites are not the traditional, like, exclusives that people pointed, like Resistance and Infamous and things like that. Even, like, Little Big Planet, I'm a little wishy-washy on. But I love the Yakuza games. I like those a lot. And I like 3D Dot Game Heroes. Another one I really like.
Well, get the Uncharted games.
Uncharted game, yeah, those are really good. The Ratchet and Clank games. You know, I actually picked up, what was I playing? A Crack in Time, because I never finished that. And I don't know, I'm not feeling that one in the way I feel Tools of Destruction. I think that one's padded a little bit more.
I haven't played a Crack in Time. I have the other two on PS3, but I don't have a Crack in Time.
I loved Tools of Destruction. Still one of my absolute favorite games on the machine. I fucking love that. So that's one of them. That you can.
I don't own a lot of exclusives on PS3. I own like a lot of games that I felt looked better on PS3.
Yeah, Folklore was the first game I got on the PS3, and still one of my favorites. I really like that game a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, if you like the Metal Gear Solid games, get 4.
Yeah. I like Valkyria Chronicles. That's a pretty good one too.
I've not played that yet.
It's good.
I've owned it forever.
Oh, Jesus. Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's one of those. I'll get around to it.
Good. Good. You do that. That wraps up listener input. And Seth, what have you been playing lately?
I got nothing, dude. I beat Kirby Mass Attack, and that's it. I haven't started anything else up. And my TV's still broken, so...
Oh, ugh. That sucks. I didn't get to play that much. As I said, I haven't really bought any new games. I took the Darkness off the shelf. I've owned that for a little while on the PS3. I'm not a fan of that game.
No.
It's really sloppy and unpolished, which is not normally a complaint from me, but it's sloppy and unpolished. Not in any positive way.
I thought the demo was interesting. I don't know.
Well, that's what I was hoping. I thought that there were some interesting ideas in it, and I think that's what kept me playing for as long as I did, but I don't think I'll be going back to it. The graphics were terrible, man. It's just an ugly game. And the animations were just wonky. Like, even, like, aiming at things. Like, his arms, like, flibbity-jibbit all over the place. It was really distracting. I think I could have taken one or the other. I think I would have taken the butt graphics or the wonky animations. But both, it's really tough.
Animation, like, bad animations really bug me in games.
Yeah. And some of the, like, the story is delivered through, like, direct exposition. Like, really, during, like, the loading screens, he's, like, sitting on a stool in a dark room just talking to you.
Huh.
And he says things that, like, a person would not say the way he's talking. Like, he feels like he's just talking to let you, the player, in on stuff. And it sounds really unnatural. It doesn't sound like how a person would speak. And, the story is just really weird. Beyond that exposition, like, the story is weird. Like, he gets these snakes on his shoulders. Like, I'm sure everyone who knows the Darkness knows that he has these demon snakes coming out of his back or whatever. Uh-huh. And that's never addressed. I mean, I'm sure it's addressed at some point, but I'm 2 hours in, and it's never been addressed. Like, it happens. Like, you don't have them at the start. It happens as you're playing, and he never says boo peep about it.
What, dude? You don't get shadow snakes on your arms? That happens all the time. Like, why would you even need to explain that?
I guess I must have missed that part of puberty or something.
I'm old enough to smell bad now.
it's just a really strange game, and there are some pretty cool ideas, like with the snakes and stuff, and the light and dark mechanic. Like, bright light saps your energy away, whereas darkness restores it. There's no direct meter for this. Just all of a sudden, like, you won't be able to use your darkness powers. Kind of a pain. You don't know when you're running out, and there's lights everywhere. It just becomes a game of shooting out all the lights, so then you can shoot the bad guys.
So it's like playing Perfect Dark, except you don't have to shoot out the lights in that one.
Just do it for fun. So you're going around shooting out the lights. Okay, can I use my snakes? Great, and then just go around eating people, eat their hearts. So there's some cool ideas. I'm not so hot on the implementation.
Does it come together?
Doesn't come together. So apparently they're making a sequel. Maybe that's better. It's just really weird. Like, it feels like a game made by amateurs that happened to get published by, like, a big publisher like 2K.
I'm, like, still surprised the game's getting a sequel, because I literally heard nobody talking about the first game. I, like, downloaded the demo on a whim.
Yeah.
And
Prey. Like, Prey's getting a sequel. Like it's like an Xbox 360, like, launch game.
I remember Prey was at least, like, getting hype before it was released.
That's true. But no one's talked about it since. Like, it's so weird. And the game doesn't, I mean, you're playing as a, it's like a completely different genre, playing as a completely different character. Like, why did we even call this Prey 2?
So it's a Red Steel
Red Steel thing. And that worked out so well for Red Steel 2.
Honestly, I think Red Steel 2 would have sold better if they dropped the Red Steel name.
Absolutely. Just called it something else, because that game was awesome. That game didn't deserve that fate. that was a good game. But, yeah, not just too much of the darkness is sloppy. I'm very forgiving. I can be forgiving if the game is fun or interesting, but it doesn't come together for me. I picked up Eternal Sonata again. I don't know why. And you know what's awesome? Chopin is a fucking badass. Like, that, he's awesome.
You play a Chopin in Eternal Sonata?
Yeah.
That's weird.
I thought that was one of the selling
points. I don't know anything about the game, dude.
It's awesome. And he's just, I'm like, man, this is like one of the best, like, protagonists in a video game this generation is fucking Frederick Chopin. Like,
does he, like, throw piano keys at you or something?
He has a baton.
A baton.
Like a conductor's stick or whatever.
All right.
And he uses that to slash at people, and he just waves it around. He's like, "Piu grave!" Like, man, it's got rules. But, you know, it's a pretty basic JRPG, but, I like that game. I do.
I like the art style on it.
It's a very pretty game. It's been surpassed. I think there are some games, because, you know, the game's quite a few years old. You know, a lot of games have surpassed it in that cel shading look. You know, we have, like, Ni No Kuni coming out for, like, PS3, and obviously that's trumped it. But it still looks like a really good game. And I think you know, distinct art styles like that age a lot better than trying to be realistic or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And they also hide deficiencies better. For example, of like The Darkness, you know, had a much more distinct art style rather than, you know, half-assed Unreal Engine or whatever the fuck it is. it would probably look a lot better. But, yeah, nah, Eternal Sunrise is still pretty good. And then I played some iOS games. I played The Dark Meadow, which I wrote a review on. If you guys want to read that, tvlist.net. I know there's a underwhelming amount of content on it these days, but I'm still trying. But the Dark Meadow is like really talked about. It was one of those iOS games that was really talked about quite a bit, and it went on sale for Halloween. So I'm like, okay, cool. $3, whatever. That's cool. I can check it out for that. And I thought it was gonna be really something cool at first because I didn't read any reviews. I just heard it talked about. There's some buzz about it, and I walked away very disappointed from that game because. It is almost like a point-and-click adventure game as you make your way through, like, this decrepit, like, hospital. And I'm like, ooh, this is really moody. Like, it's setting up, like, atmosphere really well. Like, you know, the first hallway you walk down, as you're looking down it, you can see, like, this humanoid figure, like, in the darkness, and it's just sort of swaying there. And mm-hmm. then you take a step forward, and that thing just flies backward. And so you're following it down this hallway, and you can barely see what it is. And I'm like, this is really creepy. Like, I really like this. You know, most games are like Dead Space, and it just, you know, has all the subtlety of, like, a fucking Mack truck just crashing out of the fucking walls, and that's all the only kind of scares they go for. But this was setting something up, and I really liked this idea for, like, a horror game. And then I find the enemy, and then it switches to, like, you know, a battle screen. And I'm like, oh, God.
Uh-oh.
And it just sucked out all, like, that mood that they built up. And it's basically, it's exactly like Infinity Blade on iOS. It's exactly the same game.
Craig, you need to play Fatal Frame 4.
I do need to play the Fatal Frame games. I have one of them.
The first, I don't know, like 30 minutes, you don't even see like really anything spooky, but just the atmosphere and the tension and the buildup just makes the game like horrifying to play.
Is 4 the one for the Wii?
And that's the one for Wii, yeah.
And that came out in Europe, right?
No.
Oh, it didn't?
That's Japan only.
Okay, I'll track it down then.
But there's an English patch for it. You can play it in English.
I haven't had to update my Wii since I modded it. Is that going to kill everything I have on it? Like if I go by Zelda, is that going to like wipe out my homebrew channel?
No, homebrew's on there. Nothing takes it off right now. Like as long as the homebrew channel's updated.
Okay. All right. Because I don't think I've done any updates because I haven't bought any, like Nintendo hasn't released any Wii games, so I haven't been forced to update.
I haven't seen any updates for a while anyway for it, so.
Yeah, well, like I said, Nintendo's not releasing any games, so whatever. But, yeah, I was very disappointed because it's just two completely incongruent gameplay tapes. Like this very moody, you know, exploration of like this hospital. Gorgeous graphics, it's using Unreal, and for some reason, Unreal looks like shit on consoles, but looks fucking terrific on the iPhone. And then you switch to a battle screen. It's like playing Resident Evil and wandering around the mansion and hearing, like, and then, like, running into a zombie and going, like, Final Fantasy, and everyone gets in a line, and, like, and it just completely breaks the mood. And that's, and then the battle system is, like, it's not even original. It is exactly like Infinity Blade. And the structure of the game is exactly like Infinity Blade with a primary antagonist that you can't kill right away, so you keep getting killed by it.
Isn't Infinity Blade like Punch-Out?
Yeah, which is great and all, but the thing is, like, it just doesn't fit in this game, and they don't even, like, do it that well. It's not as fluid, I don't think, as Infinity Blade. So not only do they rip off a game that's incongruent with the sort of gameplay that they're trying to, they just don't even do it that well.
You're, like, actually selling me on this game. This sounds like awesome. Like, Punch-Out versus, like, gruesome monsters in a haunted mansion.
Oh, but it's so bad, though, because, like, you turn the corner, and then it goes to the battle screen, and then, like, the bad guy just sort of comically comes slowly at you, so you can pick off a few shots of your crossbow. That's the only thing it has that Infinity Blade doesn't, is its ranged weapon. So you fire a few shots of your crossbow, and then it comes in range, and then you, you know, swipe with your sword or dodge or whatever. So, like, that's...
No, it sounds... I mean, honestly, I think they set themselves up wrong because it makes the game not what you expect it to be.
It's not even about expectations, I think. I mean, maybe part of it is, but I just don't think that the two systems work well together.
I think it might work as some sort of, like, campy thing. I mean, maybe they weren't intending for it to be like
this.
Well,
maybe, yeah. I mean, if you want to look at it as, like, camp, but, I mean, like I said, like, that first hallway walk down, it's setting up, like, a really, like... interesting, like, mood, like, with that, you know, figure floating backwards and you're chasing it, like, it's setting up a really cool mood, and then you go to the screen and, like, it just doesn't feel campy, it just feels like they didn't know how to incorporate action elements into their game, so let's rip off this other game, whether it fits in here or not, and that's what happened.
That makes it sound interesting to me, though.
If nothing else, it's interesting. Because I greatly enjoyed the exploration, I greatly enjoyed the mood, the graphics are awesome. You have your, in a lot of games, you have your dispatcher. You have an old guy in a wheelchair, and his writing is really well done. It's kind of funny. He's kind of weird. He's kind of bananas. But that's pretty well done. But then you just go in these battles, and you're like, ugh, not fun anymore. So, if nothing else, you're right. It's interesting. But I don't think it comes together all that well. I played a couple of iOS games. I played Squids, which is... really good. It's one of those games. It's almost like a strategy game, I guess, where you have a couple squids on this map and you find treasure and you attack enemies. But you move your squids around by pulling down on their tentacles on the touchscreen, like stretching them out and then releasing to like launch them.
Uh-huh.
And different units have different, you know, mobility and stuff like that. And you launch them into bad guys to attack them. And there's different kinds of units you can have, and you can equip them with hats to give them different stat bonuses and stuff. And it has a really great art style, and it's just, it's a lot of fun. And this is one of those games that, like, this game could hypothetically exist on a console. It just wouldn't be as fun. Like, you need that sort of tactile, like Angry Birds, like when you pull back on the catapult. Like, that would work with a mouse, and that's really about it. It's either touchscreen or mouse or nothing, because there's just no point otherwise. That, it's that whole tactile nature, pulling down on the squid's tentacles and then launching them. So, Squidge is really good. I definitely recommend that one. And I also downloaded Aquaria on my iPad. And I don't think that's available on iPhone. I don't think it would work either. I think the screen is too small. But Aquaria is awesome. If you have an iPad, you have to get this game. So fucking good. It's this underwater, like, Metroidvania game. Where you're swimming through underwater caverns as, like, this, I don't know, mermaid thing. And a lot of
mermaid thing.
I don't know. It has legs, so it's not really a mermaid. Some sort of fish creature. And you have like your abilities are all tied to like music. So like you press down on the character, and like you know these notes appear in a circle around her. And you can use, and they're color coded, so you can use different colors to interact with different objects. But you can also play them in order, like say like the ocarina and Ocarina of Time, and get different effects that way. So it's a really cool game. I like it a lot, and I definitely recommend checking that out if you have an iPad. Really great music, too, and just a great mood to it as well. So, awesome, awesome stuff.
And it looks good. Like,
I think it's available. Like, it's probably available on computer, too. Like, this is not, like, the first time the game's been available. I only heard about it when I heard that it was coming to the iPad. Because I don't have Windows, so I pretty much ignore all news about PC games because I can't play them. But it might be on, like, check Steam or something, because I'm pretty sure it's available for computers in some capacity. So, you know, if you don't have an iPad, that's an option as well. Actually, you know, while we're on the podcast, let's give a definitive answer to that. Let me look that up and tell people where they can buy that
game. I'm just on YouTube, and I typed in Aquaria for PC, and I'm definitely getting videos and stuff.
Yeah, Windows, Mac, OS X, and Linux. So it actually is available for everything. If you wanna check that out, and apparently it was part of the Humble Indie Bundle in 2010. And this is actually quite old. It was released in 2007 for Windows, so it's not even a new game.
Wow.
So even I don't have my finger on the pulse of everything, but this is really good. And in any way that you can check it out, do check it out. Actually, I'm gonna. Yeah. I'm going to check Steam right now.
I think I might get this off Steam. This looks, I'm watching YouTube videos. It looks really good.
Let me check Steam real quick. Oh, man. Now they got Sanctum on. I want to play Sanctum, too.
What's Sanctum?
Aquaria is $5 on the iPad. It's apparently $10 on Steam, but it is on Steam. And it is only available for Windows on Steam. So if you want a Mac version, maybe... I think Chris said he had it through the Mac Store. So if you're running, like, Snow Leopard or whatever, and you have access to the Mac Store, that's, I guess, where you would get it there. So definitely check it out in any capacity that you can. Sanctum, I think, was a... I'm pretty sure that was a first-person shooter tower defense game with a really cool art style, and I really want to play it. It's available for Windows only, so...
Man, I'm not huge on tower defense.
It's $5 for this weekend, so check it out. Or you can get a 4-pack for $15. So check out Sanctum, because I can't. Think of people like me.
Everybody, I gotta get a Windows machine.
If I got a Windows machine, like, man, that's why I'd be playing it. Like, that's the only reason why I would have it, is to play, like, these little games that are on Steam. I would love to play those. But.
Should get one, Craig.
I should. I should eventually. I will.
Did you, like, run Boot Camp or whatever on your Mac?
Well, I tried to run it on my iMac, and it got mad at me. It couldn't install Windows. What it suggested I do was back up my disk, reformat it, reinstall everything, and then try again. I'm like, Windows ain't fucking worth on it. I'm not doing everything on my computer. Fuck you.
Try again, and it may work after you do all that.
And my MacBook doesn't have enough hard drive space or something like that. Like, I bought my MacBook before I even considered doing podcasts or having videos or anything like that. So the hard drive is pretty cluttered. And so I don't.
Can you run it off external hard drive?
Windows? Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. I would have to look into that more. It's not worth the hassle. Eventually, I'll probably just get a whole separate machine for it, is what I'll do. So, but anyway, that's everything I have played. And check out Sanctum and Aquaria. Check out Dark Meadow if you're interested in a game that's interesting but may not be very quote-unquote good.
If you want to punch out some monsters, go for it.
I just say get Infinity Blade. Just get the game that does what that does but better.
But it does it take place in a haunted house, Craig?
This is true. Infinity...
I just picture walking into, like, a haunted house and, like, there's, like, some ghost or something. Just start, like, boxing him or something.
You're going down, Glass Joe.
Even his ghost is frail.
I was reading about Infinity Blade, too. That seems pretty interesting. They have this idea called Clash Mobs, where there will be, like, this monster has, like, an overwhelming amount of hit points. Just tons of hit points. And it's only going to be there for a 24-hour period. So you have a limited time, say like 30 seconds, to go in there and deal as much damage as you can, and then it gets saved to a cloud. And basically everyone who's playing the game who attacks this thing, their damage gets saved against it. So it's like this sort of like really interesting multiplayer kind of deal where you're not directly playing with people, but you're helping people take down this one monster. And everyone who plays, who's involved with taking down that monster, gets some sort of item.
Wouldn't it be awesome if you're the person who, like, deals the last hit points, though?
Yeah, right? Yeah! Then everyone else who didn't kill the monster gets the same fucking, like, ring or whatever.
They don't get to watch it go down, though.
Yeah, nah, that's true. But I thought that was really kind of cool. And I'm like, Infinity Blade 2, the first one was good, but I have no interest in playing. Oh, Clash Mobs, you don't say. So, that sounds pretty good. But anyway... There's episode 61 all done. I want to thank everyone for listening. And I guess until next time, you guys take it easy.
Bye.